All right, coming to you live with another episode of OTF, better known as One Tank with Frank, 10 toes down, doing it for the culture. And we are coming up, we talked a little bit last episode about the pandemic and how it feels somewhat like people are getting more comfortable going out and about. They're getting more comfortable and with just interacting with other people. Some people are better at it than others. And it seems like it shifts between mask on, mask off, and how people are, you know, interacting when they bump it up into each other in the stores and in public. I wasn't out too much this last week, but it sounds like, Frank, you were out and about in a couple different counties.
No, actually, this week I was just in Sonoma County.
Oh, okay.
You know, here we've been talking about my experiences and all the little nooks and crannies, you know, of Northern California, and how people react and how people in smaller areas seem to be more cautious, you know, because their bubbles are smaller and they don't want anybody to come into their area and destroy it. So this was interesting, and I've got a good point with how these people are acting, or I think it's good that that the way they're acting.
Conscious.
Yeah, the conscious, that's a good word, because everywhere I went, it seemed like all the employees are wearing masks, and then, you know.
Now, is that still a county or a state mandate that if you're vaccinated, you could go in and not wear a mask, but the employees got to be masked up?
Yeah, well, I think so, because that's what the sign.
So it might be out of their hands.
It might be, but I notice on the front, you know, because I don't know that information for sure, but I know on the front a lot of stores say, you know, wear a mask if you haven't been vaccinated.
Yeah.
And so we're feeling good because I'm going in and I'm seeing all the employees there, which they're interacting with more people. So I like to see that running through the finish line.
Yeah.
You know, because how many times you remember that one guy that was caught the football or something, and I think it was a playoff game, and he started doing his little strut, and the guy caught him at the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
And he didn't get the touchdown. So, you know,
You see that a lot in racing, like joggers or racing. The guy puts his hands up a little bit and he slows down his pace, and then the other guy comes through out of nowhere and just sprints past him.
Yeah, I mean, you can look them up online, I'm sure, and find a bunch of them. But
yep, they're called fails.
Yeah, that's right. But I don't know. I always grew up with the Charlie Hustle attitude.
Got it.
You know, Pete Rose. And, you know, for me,
head first sliding.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't a big fan of head first. I would do it once in a while.
It's more a metaphor.
Okay. Well, yeah. I like the hook slide. I like to be able to run around it, because my favorite game when I was a kid, because of my hyper energy, was Monkey in the Middle. And because you had to learn how to go back and forth and get, you know, then you get on the base. And
I think they call that pickle nowadays.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that might be an outdated term. We'll look into that.
Okay. Yeah, and so I just loved it because that's where I learned my little maneuvers of cutting in back and cutting in and hook sliding and getting back to that base, avoiding the tag.
Yeah.
Avoiding the tag. You know what it is? Avoid the tag.
It's the same thing with the masks.
And run through the finish line.
Yep, it's the same thing with the masks. Avoid the germs.
Right.
So yeah. Yeah, still hand sanitize.
Yeah, so they're my kind of players, these people out there. Whether it's a mandate or not, you know, cleanliness is next to chili godliness. So let's keep it clean out there for everybody's sake. Because who wants to give somebody a germ, any kind of germ?
Yeah, not even the common flu.
Yeah.
No one wants to be that guy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we don't even want to go into my incident. What happened last week was an old sriracha, but it wasn't good. So let's
Yeah, always check the dates of your food.
Yeah, I messed up. Nothing against sriracha. I love sriracha. But I did have an old bottle that was June of 2018, and I shouldn't have eaten it. Let's put it that way. Flavor was there, but boy, did it upset my stomach. But so, you know, in other words, let's keep it
healthy. Attention a little bit.
Yeah, pay and conscious. I like that word. Let's stay conscious. So that's how I'm feeling.
Yeah. Well, that's good. It seems like that's a little bit of my experience as well. It's one of those things where it seems like certain people that might have a sort of maybe just an impression of like, okay, well, maybe I need to put my mask on with this person. And where I think that it depends on the situation. You know, some people are, you know, better at it than others of just, you know, we got to just treat everybody the same and just be safe about all things. It's not like you could tell who may have it and who may not. I mean, if someone comes in and they look under the weather, then, you know, of course do that. But
Yeah, and also, you know, we don't know what these people have, you know, have been through. Maybe they lost a loved one.
Yeah, a lot of people did.
You know, so
a little bit of compassion, so and patience.
That, yeah, so you know, so what I did when I'm a sensor type person, feel type person. I always have been, and so when I walk into a store, if I feel the energy of somebody that's wearing maybe wearing a mask and is scared,
yeah,
then I totally go around them,
yeah,
and just like give them their space and just walk slow, you know, don't panic them. And then there's people that just, you know, like I've noticed some places I go, people are like, oh, hey, how you doing? You know, haven't seen you in a while and want to engage, you know?
Yeah, and maybe even do a hug and stuff. Well, yeah, it's nuts. I'm not trying to do that either. But
you know, it's that running through the finish line. You know, let's not go, hey, we won the war, we won the race, we won everything, you know, and then next thing you know, you got an arrow in your back. So just be careful out there and let's, you know, be safe. It's a crazy world out there. It's a spicy world out there. Anything can happen. So, you know, just take care and be conscious. That's what I'm saying.
So now for some fun stuff.
It
seems like we've talked a little bit about a bunch of different foods and stuff like that, but I think to me, especially working a 9-to-5 and other stuff like that, I think people miss out on lunch. You know, mm-hmm. It's a quick this, it's a quick that, and there's hot lunches, there's cold lunches, but I'm a big fan of sandwiches, and there's a bunch of different kinds of sandwiches. I mean, there's a million sandwiches out there, but for a hot lunch, I like a good grilled cheese.
Oh yeah, you can't go grilled cheese, especially if you have the right cheese.
Yeah, yeah, and there's many ways to make them, and there's many different condiments you could do. And the way I like to get down is
then you can add anything to it.
Oh yeah. Let me break it down real quick.
Okay.
So there's a sourdough type bread you could get. It's just your random white bread. I mean, you could use any white bread. And now here's the trick and the key that it took me a long time to learn, or I don't forget where I picked this up, but what you do is before you put it in the pan with the butter and all that stuff, is you toast the bread. You put the bread in the toaster.
Okay.
Yeah, you put the bread in the toaster.
Do you brown it or just get it warm? Or
No. You get it. It's not, you know, of course not Cajun style, not black, but you get it, you know, just like you like it, just like it's grilled. Just a little, you know, a little bit of a little tan. You know?
Ready to go.
So you put it in the toaster. You pop that out. It's a little tan, ready to go. You put butters on both sides. Then you put the bread in the pan with some butter in the pan as well. Right, and then what I'll do is which is kind of odd because I'm not a huge fan of it per se a lot of it, but then I'll put mayonnaise on the other side of the bread, and then I'll just use what I like to use is it's usually pre-sliced whatever, but I'll get the pepper jack cheese, and then I'll put that in there, and then it's the other side on top with the butter on the thing, and then the key to do this to get it nice and good and hot and steamy is I'll put a pan a top on the pan, you know what I mean, so something that covers it. And now that's just a simple rainy day, you know, good warm
grilled
cheese.
That'd be good with some soup.
Yep,
huh?
Exactly. Tomato soup or sometimes clam chowder, depending.
Have you ever gone to a restaurant and tried tomato bisque?
I have not. That's one of those things I just do out of the can.
Yeah.
I never order tomato out.
I don't know why, but at a restaurant, it always tastes better. You know, I'm picturing that grilled cheese you just described on dipping it into one of those bisques.
Yeah.
Like at some of these restaurants I've had, oh my God, that would be good. And I think they put, I don't know if it's not parsley or some kind of.
Oh, it's probably Parmesan.
No, it's green, sprinkle a little green something on top.
Oh, oregano?
Is that what it is?
I don't know. I'm just saying green stuff.
It was good. It was good. We're going to have to check into that because I'm sure there's something that is known to go on it that's green on the top.
Yeah.
You know, and hey,
the fixins.
And don't knock the Parmesan cheese. Let's have a cheese party.
Yep,
you know,
exactly.
Put the sandwich. You got your sandwich in the cheese got the sandwich in the soup, and next thing you know, you have a great meal, not a simple rainy day snack.
Yep, exactly. You know what I mean? They're it's good for on the, you know, if you get to have time to sit down and eat a good one. And now, that's just my simple grilled cheese. Like, if I really want to get busy,
is what you can do. You ever do the double cheese?
Oh yeah, no, I put two pieces of cheese.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, they go side by side, so you got the thick piece in the middle.
Oh man, would you ever put something in the middle?
Yeah, no, they overlap because I get the square cut already sliced cheese.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, if you're gonna put them on both pieces of bread, you already put the mayonnaise on the inside part of the bread, right?
Yes.
But do you ever put something in the center?
Yeah. I'm getting to that right now.
Oh shoot, I'm already.
Yeah, you're jumping the gun.
Sorry,
but yeah. So then. What if I have more time and I really want to get busy, like I was saying, is what I'll do is once you put the bread in the toaster, what I'll have is these pre-sliced, they come two in a packet of a ham steak.
Right? Oh, okay.
So while that pan's warming up and while my bread's going, is all toast because it's pre-cooked or whatever. You know, so I'll warm up and brown that ham steak.
Graduate to above a grilled cheese sandwich at this point when you add the ham, or is it still considered a grilled cheese?
I mean, it's grilled. It's not a thing. It's four star.
I always wondered it.
Yeah.
Okay, now do you dice up the ham?
No.
One solid piece?
It's a steak. It's a ham steak. Yeah.
Oh, so you put the whole steak.
I put the whole steak in the pan and I brown it while the bread's going. And then that way, when the bread pops, I'm ready to flip. You know, flip the ham
steak.
Time means
everything.
You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
And then I'm putting the butter on the bread while I'm grilling the other side of the ham steak. And then that way it's the same thing as I said before. You know, then I take out the ham steak, then put the bread down, mayonnaise, some cheese, then the ham steak on the cheese, and then the other piece of bread.
Is there any mustard involved in this situation?
No, you know, and I've done it like that, but for some reason the mayonnaise is fine warmed up like that. But I
hear you.
It depends, because I got the pepper jack and I've done it before, but when I do mustard, especially when I use the holy mustard, is I'll do it like a dipping sauce. You know what I mean?
Oh,
so I'll just put some on the plate and then I'll spoon it on as I bite it.
Okay.
So I can control how much I'm putting on bite to bite, because I already got the pepper jack cheese. So, yeah.
Almost like wasabi and sushi.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things. So every bite doesn't have to have it. But I mean, I'm a huge fan of mustard. But for some reason, to me, the warmed up mustard just doesn't translate.
Gotcha.
So if I do, it's cold after.
On the side.
Yeah.
Almost sounds like this shall be served cold on the side.
Yeah.
Revenge should be served on a cold platter.
Or it's best served, yeah.
Or best served on a cold platter.
Yeah, but this is different. This is to feed the tummy, not the...
Yeah, but it's still best served on a cold platter.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's what we're talking about is temperature and...
Yeah,
and it's got to be in timing. It's got to be precise.
Temperature and timing.
So that's the thing, because it can't get soggy, and you got to eat these good to go, especially if you're doing it for real and you're using some sort of sourdough, you know, cut French bread, you know. Then that, you really got to get your timing down, because you don't want that to get soggy, because then you end up with like soggy, it's almost like soggy French toast with cheese.
Yeah, and then you, ooh.
If you're using that kind of bread.
And then you don't want the soup after that.
No.
You got to do it right. And this is a one, so you're doing these one at a time.
If you've got
the family around, or your girlfriend or somebody.
It's made to
special,
order.
Special, significant other. Can you, you know, make two at a time, or is it too complicated?
Well, you could, but it depends on your setup. I mean, if you just got, I'm just using one pan. You know, if you have a grill, I mean, if it was a restaurant setting or something industrial, and you have a grill, you could do six at a time.
Okay.
You know what I mean? If you got a flat iron top.
Because I've been in that situation before at parties where there's only one, and you know what I've done? I'd cut them in fours and then let everybody try, you know, a snacky. And then get the next round and the next round and
I'm just talking about for one. This is selfish cooking 101.
Oh, okay.
this is my moment.
Selfish minds have to ask.
Yeah. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, or unselfish minds.
These are just one ups.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
But when I do it, like you're saying, if there's one or two people, they can make their own.
Yeah.
No, I'm just playing. But you do it made to order. So you got the show on, it's a rainy day or whatever, and you make hers, or you make, you know, your friends, whatever, you give that to them, and then they're eating it while the show's in the background and you're doing yours, you know, and then you just sit down and eat, and by the time you catch up, usually, you know, it's soup time.
Yeah.
You know, and you both catch up with a little bit of good convo.
Oh my goodness. Now, it sounds so rich with the bisque soup. Is there any room for a salad in this situation?
No, that to me is just a rainy day. That goes together. It would just be a tomato soup and the grilled cheese.
Okay.
Yeah, but if I'm doing a sandwich, a grilled cheese, or a BLT, BLTs are pretty much the same as the grilled cheese, but you just toast the bread. You don't put them in the pan. And then it depends on the bacon. If you're going to do bacon for a BLT, I usually do it where I cook the bacon in the pan. Not in the pan, but in the oven.
Oh, right.
On a cookie sheet.
Yeah.
Or if it's, you know, and it's simple like that. I don't have a chef's coat or anything like that. So if it's a turkey bacon thing, I just put them in the microwave.
Okay.
Yeah. And that way you can control the level it is. And for turkey bacon, I like it a little bit more crispy. So like that. And then I put cheese on the BLTs and avocado and lettuce and tomato and onion and all that. And same type of white bread.
Yeah, there's so many ways you can go with that.
But like I was like you were asking before about sides, and on a non-runny day, if I'm getting any sandwich or anything like that, I'm down with three things: for my sandwiches. I like chips.
Yes.
So if chips, coleslaw, or fries, basically, are the three I go with the sandwich.
Do you ever put the coleslaw on the sandwich?
Oh, yeah, especially if I'm getting some sort of, what's it called, pulled pork.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's how I roll.
Yeah, dude. I was out the coast, I think it was it earlier in the week or last week? I forget. But I went out to Ganocho's out there, and they do all the barbecue, homemade, fresh.
And so is that when, because the pulled pork I've done is in the crock pot, so I don't know how they do it.
I don't know exactly how they do, but
yeah,
it's delicious.
It sounds like a barbecue version would be delicious. Because, yeah, I've just done it in the crock pot, and it just tons of
but
barbecue
I know
sauce.
It's a lot of prep. And a lot, whatever
yeah,
they
it's
do,
all day.
It's yeah, and this stuff is so tender. So the girl in there, when I went in there, she goes, "Do you want the coleslaw on the side or on the sandwich?" And immediately I'm going, you know, I've done it before that way. I mean, I go, "Well, what do you recommend?" And she goes, "Oh, we recommend on the sandwich."
Here's what I do. That's 100% correct. I always get it on the side, and then I put it on the sandwich myself.
Okay.
Because coleslaw,
so it's going to end up getting there anyway.
It's going to get there anyway, but coleslaw to me, it depends on where they're scooping it from. Sometimes you get a lot of juice, and I don't want to put them just to scoop the juicy coleslaw into my sandwich and make
right.
it soggy.
And then so, it messes so if up I, the bread.
I, yeah, exactly, because I'm sure they do it with the spoon. I'm going to be doing it with the fork. So
nice.
So it's like straining.
Oh, so yeah, straining. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Then let me.
So always on the side.
Let me give me an exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. Was these guys. Because now that you
see. Oh, they probably got their stuff together.
Oh, yeah, because yeah. the way you just mentioned it, I forgot about it. Sometimes you get, and it's good coleslaw.
Oh,
but
for
it's,
sure.
It's cut up real slender, and then like you said, it's all the stuff goes right through.
Yeah.
And then you've got a messy sandwich. But I took the girl's advice, and it came out perfect. No runs, no drips, no errors.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was perfect, and every bite was consistent, and the bread never got soggy.
There you go.
And you know what? That's the key. Never let the bread get soggy.
No, the only time I think I've ever seen soggy anything work is that, like, in a hot dog eating competition. And I don't know how they do that. They dunk
that. It slithers down quicker.
Yeah, no, I get all that, but they ain't eating for flavor. And we're talking about eating for taste.
Oh, my God. Well, who knows? Maybe they like it so much. That's why they're good
they
at it.
They can do 100 of them. Yeah, no kidding.
I can't do that.
But yeah, I agree 100%. The bread cannot be soggy. That's the kiss of death.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I know one time when I was a kid, though, my mom, as a punishment, said I had to eat all the donuts, and I felt bad for my brothers. Because
that doesn't sound like a punishment. That sounds amazing.
Well, that's how it started. That's how it started. Yeah. I was like, oh, I can lick this.
Yeah,
no
like
problem,
Homer Simpson.
Right? I got 12 in front of me. I could do this. And, you know, the first one went down smooth. The second one went down smooth. The third one tasted great, you know. And there and therefore, it kept going downhill. And then when I got to the end, I was like, it was a punishment.
Yeah.
It was a cruel punishment. And the thing is, I literally, when we would get donuts every other Sunday, you know, after church, I literally didn't eat a donut for it probably wasn't over a year, but it was more than 3 months.
Well,
you know, it could have been 6 months. I can't remember, but it was, I couldn't eat a donut for a long time.
Well, there you go.
So we got to be careful out there with these contests. Don't push yourself too far.
There you go.
You know.
But yeah, as far as sandwiches go, BLTs are up there. I don't know if I have a top five, but for me, if I'm going to have like a deli style sandwich, the meats that I'm going to go with two different ones. And it depends on my mood, but I like a salami sandwich with everything on it, of course. Or
ooh,
I will get
old school.
Yeah, or I will get a turkey with bacon.
Yeah, I don't know what it has been, but turkey has been my go-to for the last couple of years. Because, you know what I like? Once again, the variety. You can get the pepper turkey. You can get the smoked turkey. You know, you can get the maple turkey. You can get all these different roasted turkey.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's like, oh, which one? Which one? And then it just seems like when you put everything else on there, it just, I don't know. I'm a big turkey fan.
Yeah. And
big
then,
turkey.
And then we were talking about difference between hot
it's
sandwiches, cold.
It's not just
cold.
For Thanksgiving. You know?
No. Yeah. We're talking about hot sandwiches or cold sandwiches, and with turkey, what I've had, which is delicious, is a hot open face.
You know,
they got them at place? Willie Bird's, I think.
Yeah, and you put the gravy on. I mean,
of course,
with a mashed potatoes,
gravy, all that,
oh,
and it's
my
just
God.
A slice of bread, and then some good turkey.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then like if I'm gonna do that myself after Thanksgiving, is I'll even use the stuffing. Some people call it dressing. I'll put the stuffing in the sandwich as well because I'm a huge stuffing fan.
Oh, I've done that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've done that. I mean, that's a rare occasion, though, because that's usually a holiday thing when you got all the best.
Well, that's what I mean, after Thanksgiving.
Yeah. That's a lot of work to do just for the...
Well, stovetop takes like 2 minutes, but yeah.
You know what? Stovetop's not bad.
Oh, it's delicious.
You know what I mean? And it is, and it's quick and it is easy. So there are shortcuts that actually aren't bad. You know what I mean?
No.
Yeah, stovetop. God, we used to eat that a lot. That was good stuff.
Yeah.
So what else? What other sides do you like?
Oh, for my sandwiches, yeah. I like them all pretty much. I'm not a huge pickle guy, but I will go if I'm doing the turkey with the bacon, then it's lettuce, tomato, onion. I do pepper jack cheese, and then I don't. Some places do it, not all places do it, but I'll get the cut up pepperoncinis are delicious.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
Tomato. I'll do avocados, of course.
Mm-hmm. Can't go wrong with those avocados.
And then if you go to a good sandwich shop, they will warm up the bacon, so your bacon's warm.
Yeah. Oh, you gotta have warm bacon.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing a sandwich, you gotta have it warm, but not overly crispy. I don't like that. Yeah, but it's okay if it gets like that, then I crumble it up.
Yeah, it'll cheese. Be like big bacon bits.
Yeah, inside the cheese.
But I like onion. I'm the same way. I like the bacon where you could fold it, even on my burgers.
Yeah. So what do you think is the best side for that the sandwich besides that soup?
Oh, for the grilled cheese?
Yeah.
It's gotta be a soup.
Okay, but let's say you can't have a soup.
Oh, then grilled cheese. What's your second choice? My second choice would maybe be some sort of salad, maybe a macaroni salad or a potato salad.
Ooh, yeah. I think I'm on your page with the potato salad.
And what I'll do with sometimes with the macaroni salad.
Or if the macaroni salad's good, you know.
Yeah.
But are you a potato or macaroni
person? I like them both the same, pretty much.
Really?
But here's the difference between how I fix them up and dress them up. Is macaroni salad, I'll do it sometimes, but with the potato salad, I do it for sure. Is what I'll do is I take the ground pepper. When I put it on my plate, I'll pepper it up with a bunch of pepper, and then I'll take a little bit of the red chili sauce.
Ooh,
and then,
okay.
And then I douse it. Not douse it, I should say. I'm trying to say, what is it, that word? I'll dollop it.
A dollop here and a dollop there.
Yeah, right? So yeah. You can picture it, right? Just a little twist of
with the
wrist.
With the Grey Poupon. Or the Chili God's Holy Mustard,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, no. The red sauce.
Oh, the red sauce.
Yeah,
okay.
Not mustard.
Okay,
the red
keep
sauce.
Me focused.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
and
then what happens?
It's just a twist of the wrist, and you just do a couple drops here and there, and then when you eat, because you can kind of mix it up while you eat it.
Oh, right,
so
right.
It turns it a little bit of red color, which is fun as well.
Yeah.
And then it's just a little bit of kick, a little bit of extra, because it depends on how you do your potato salads, because I like it sometimes when they put the green olives in it, and also with the relish and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's the way to go. That's the way to go. I you know, pickles to me, relish and all that, it's great, you know? Sometimes it gives it the balance you need. But on a grilled cheese sandwich, I wouldn't put the pickles.
No, no.
You know?
No, grilled cheese has those three ingredients only. And the only extra that I do that I've learned over the years is to toast the bread and put the mayonnaise.
Yeah. And don't forget that. Steak, ham.
Yeah,
steak.
No, those are the ingredients. But I mean, those are the only extra. Because normally a grilled cheese, depending on how it is, it's just you put butter on the bread, you put it in the pan, and then you put some cheese in it.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds really good. And then, so what other sides would you recommend? I mean, we don't have to talk grilled cheese or anything, but just sides in general
for lunch.
Yeah, I've gone to a place in Santa Rosa, Osceola's, and I would always get their chili.
Ooh.
As a side.
Yeah.
And then I'd go to their little bar where you can add stuff, and I'd add more onions. I'd put a little mustard
cheese.
And ketchup and cheese. And
I've dumped a little bit of mustard in chili before.
Yeah, yeah,
and then
yeah.
I've also done it where it's grated cheese on the top, onions, and then a little sour cream.
Oh, I forgot about sour cream. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's just so, it's so delicious. And, but their fries, their steak fries are amazing, and their salads are amazing, but, you know, once in a while, I have to go with that chili, you know, and it makes the meat a little heavier, you know, with the sandwich you got or whatever, but it's a must when I go there.
Yeah, Osceola chili and fries, delicious.
Oh yeah, if you did that, they serve those. Yeah, yeah. And I can tell you these big wedge steak fries. You know what I mean, with a little bit of salt on top, and then you put the chili and the cheese and the onions and the sour cream. I mean, dude, that's a meal in itself. You don't even need a sandwich at that point.
No.
It's good beer food, that's for sure.
Oh, for sure. It soaks it up, and it, mm-hmm. yeah, it's delicious. If I'm doing fries with a sandwich, which I don't know if a lot of places do this, but just if I could do it like that, I like the crisp cut fries.
Oh, there's no bad way to do a French fry.
No, huh? But you like could go with the sandwich.
McDonald's French fry. Yeah. You could go big steak fry. You could go curly fry. You could go, you know, you could do anything you want with those fries. It's you put the right salt and pepper on there and or whatever and yeah. mix it with something. I mean, God, I like to have it with breakfast every morning. Yeah. If I could.
And then I like ketchup with fries, but there's that ketchup that you showed me and you gave me, that Australian ketchup. Mm-hmm. It's a spicy ketchup. I don't know. I've never even looked at the ingredients. I just know it tastes good, and I like that with my fries so much.
Yeah, and you know what makes the ketchup for grown-ups so good is that it's spicy, but it doesn't linger and burn you, you know, like it's you feel it, but you're not getting too, you know,
it doesn't overpower.
Yeah. And but it's adds. Got all this flavor, and people use it to like a cocktail sauce because it's got that little,
like with shrimp. I never tried it with shrimp.
Oh no, people have told me we put that or dip our shrimp in there. In fact, Osceola is the place I was just at Fifth Street Grill in Santa Rosa. I was just talking about that. They go through that ketchup because, like, you know, beer food, you don't want the chili to kill you.
No.
But you like a little bite as you're drinking. Yeah. You know, you want that.
A little wake up. That's why hot wings are so popular.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's, and the ketchup is doing good. I think we're going to enter Sonoma County Harvest Fair again this year. So we'll be looking forward to that. That's something I forgot about that's coming up. That'll be great to be back involved in. So yeah, we're getting out there. Everybody's get back into the groove and just being real, real safe and cautious.
But you brought up cocktail sauce and shrimp. We also were talking about a food competition and shrimp.
Right.
I feel like it's something I might be able to win in. I feel like I could eat 100, no problem.
Yeah, you know what?
I'm a huge. It's so funny, yeah, because I'm just a huge shrimp person. I'll eat because you could buy. I don't know how many even in them, but a whole plate of like 50 or something.
Yeah.
Or 25, and they come in that round. They're round, and they're all the way over. They, you know, they outline the plate, and they're all round. And then they got the cocktail sauce in the middle, and they're frozen. And then I just put them in a bowl of warm water. They defrost and eat them with the cocktail sauce. I could eat that whole plate while I'm watching a show.
Oh my God! You know, I think my go-to would be abalone.
Ooh, as far as seafood goes?
Oh, well, no, as far as if I could win a contest.
Oh, abalone, really? Okay, yeah. In the steak form?
Anyway, you do it. My buddy right here in Healdsburg, just down the corner, had a party one time, and all the abalone, his friends were abalone divers.
Yeah.
So they all brought their abalone. Nobody, it wasn't cheating or poaching or whatever. Yeah. It was a legitimate.
Of course.
Which is really hard because you can only get so many out there.
No.
And it's dangerous.
Yeah.
So all these abalone guys show up, and we were partying all day with them and drinking beer and having fun. And he's like me, would barbecue, take a break, have a beer, barbecue, and go all night, you know. And so by the end of the night, most of the people had left, and that's when all the abalone showed up.
Yeah.
So I'm there.
Never leave early.
Dude, I was at the barbecue. Well, you remember the Cinderella story with the Oakland Raiders? Remember that one?
No.
Oh, they were losing so bad. It was 1970-something, early 70s. They were losing so bad in the playoffs that NBC or whoever turned the channel and started Cinderella.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to
go. Yeah.
And then it was called the Cinderella game. I think it was Cinderella.
Because they probably came back and won.
And they come back and won. Yeah. So never count. Yeah. So the guys are like, okay, Frank, you're on the grill and I'm cooking. And all these guys said, eat as much as you want. We've got extra. We don't want it to go to waste. And I'm sitting there barbecuing for the remaining people. And it was literally one for me, one for you. For me, one for you.
She loves me,
you.
She loves me not.
And dude, they said, go ahead. And I'm eating and cooking. I'm putting my sauces on there, and they're loving all the sauces. And we're just having this, it was a euphoria, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing was, is is, you know, it was that last round, so my stomach was already warmed up, I think. And you know, it was like, how, when are you going to get a chance to eat the best? As far as I'm concerned, you know, I love calamari, but there's nothing
like fresh,
like abalone.
Yeah. It's ballpark me. How many do you think you ate?
Dude, it's hard to tell, but I at the end there was I think we almost finished it all, but there was like a little left. But dude, I literally was one for you barbecue every time I brought, you know,
a number.
Yeah, and then because there was people were mingling and drinking, so they would rotate out to the barbecue. How many you got now, Frank? Oh, here you go, you know. But it was like, dude, and they were, and these were incredible. They were fresh. I mean, right, you know.
How many do you think you ate?
Oh, they were in little pieces, but it's
how, oh, I see what you're saying. You're doing bites.
We're cutting it up, but
it, so yeah, it's funny that, yeah, abalone is delicious, and it
I probably ate 10.
10? Okay.
I'm thinking, I don't know if that's enough to win, but yeah, that's a lot. If we could have that contest, that would be awesome.
But like, yeah, like you said, these guys were divers, and it's a regulated fish, and I've gone actually abalone before. Have you gone?
No.
Here's the thing, because it's regulated, I would just happen to be staying with a friend, and it's one of those things where you get tags for them, and I just went because I'm a body and I could get some tags. Yeah. I know nothing about it. We weren't diving. We were trying to pick them off the rocks. We got up at 4 a.m. to go out to Bodega Bay, and it was cold. I'm tired. I'm not into it. Yeah. I got Nikes on, and I'm out there just slipping on the rocks, falling. I'm soaking wet.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a raccoon on the rocks, and I'm like looking at him. He's looking at me like, are you supposed to be here? And I'm looking at him like, are you supposed to be here? I didn't even know they had raccoons at the beach.
Yeah.
It was just a miserable time.
He was asking why you were there so
exactly.
early.
Exactly.
That was his time.
You know, the sun started coming up, you know, and then the raccoon scurried off. I'm slipping and sliding all over the place, soaking wet. It's about 9 o'clock at this point. A couple of my buddies have already gotten them, and then a friend went to check on me, and I still haven't found anything. But what I see, and this is the saving grace, is because there's a million people out there.
Yeah.
And I see the game warden, right? And he's walking back down the trail because he busted some guys that took too many.
Oh,
right?
That's a big problem.
It's a big deal, right? So he had about 4 or 5 abalones, and he's going to put them back in the water, right? So what I do is I'm not gonna find anything. I got an abalone knife. I don't even know how it works. I know it's got a handle, you know, and I'm out there slipping and sliding. So I make my way to the shore where he's about to do it. And I'm about, you know, 10 to 15 feet away from him. And he's putting him back down on the rock, whatever. And as soon as he turns to go, I make my move and I go pick him up. And that's it for me. It's a wrap. I got my abalone.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
I wasn't finding any of them.
And that's legal beagle, finders, keepers.
I got a tag.
Oh,
what are they going to do? I mean, but I played it cool like that because I didn't know. Like you said, it does seem like there might be something about that. So I waited till he turned his back and he was going away to grab him. So I didn't walk up on him and be like, hey, can I take those, buddy? Because you know, I it wasn't a situation where you want to get to know. I'd rather ask for forgiveness later. Like, right. Oh, sorry, my bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Do I look like a fisherman?
It's my first day out.
Yeah.
I thought that was,
you know what
the
mean?
Rule.
I got Levi's on, Nikes, and a sweatshirt.
I'm a baseball player.
Yeah.
They let us steal. You know, no. So yeah, I get it. But the
so yeah, I lucked out. And then we went back and we did like you did. We didn't do them on the grill. They were fried, whatever, and battered. And they were like, you got to pound them out and all that stuff. You got to get them out the shell and then you pound them with a hammer and get them all nice and tender.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it was a lot of work, and I cheated to get mine. I guess you could say, because I caught them on the rebound.
Beginner's luck.
Beginner's luck. Yeah, but I did not enjoy them.
Why?
I just did not like the abalone. I don't know if
it was for you.
It was not for me. You know, I don't know if it was because we didn't have a good tartar sauce. I don't know if it was
guilty conscience.
No, it was nothing like that. No, I don't even know what that means.
Okay, good.
But yeah, no, I was not a huge fan, so I would lose that contest.
Okay.
But it was exciting to try and get them, and I don't know. God bless you, abalone people, especially the divers, because you see, because they're like seals out there. Because I'm out there on the rocks slipping and sliding, and you see their heads pop up, and you're like, "Whoa, what are you doing down there, buddy?"
Yeah, and it's dangerous, you know, with the tide shifting, they get smacked.
Yeah, because it's free diving.
Yeah, and
there's no air tanks.
Into the rocks, and there's our sharks out there. My friend said he saw a great whiteout at Bodega Bay recently. He's a fisherman. Abalone guy too. He's gone and dived and gotten the abalone, and you know, so there are risks associated with it that you don't even know. It's on your table and you don't know. This could have got eaten
by deadliest catch
eaten by a shark, but he handed off his prize abalone to his friend, and his friend swam the shore, and then you end up with that abalone. You don't know the story behind it. Somebody could have died or risked their life for your meal. So when there was all that abalone, yeah, I was a little motivated.
Yeah, I hear you.
I always rise to the
occasion. And I'm sure the way you made it would have been delicious, and I probably would have loved it off the grill. I like almost anything off the grill.
Dude, I think we were doing it all kinds of different ways and doing different sauces. And like you said, I think they had some... was it tartar sauce?
Yeah. Well, and also, it sounds like this was a social event. You're out there and you're grilling, so it's festive and it's fun.
Oh, we had a blast.
And then, I could totally see doing bites of it while I'm drinking beers and having it as like an hors d'oeuvre, but just a big old abalone steak. I don't know. I wasn't feeling it that time. And I may be remembering wrong, and it also could be that they were bullshit for me to get, so I was like, F these things from the jump. I don't know. But I do love shellfish. And they're delicious.
You know,
I like crab. I like lobster.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like all that stuff.
Yeah, my other buddy brought crab from one of my work buddies. Brought some crab and
boy, oh, yeah.
The guys didn't want to eat it, and I was like, eat some, Frank. I don't know. And I eat some, and then they go, oh, we don't want ours. Here, eat this one. And at the end, they go, here, have it. And I was like, dude, this stuff is amazing.
Yeah, that was your lucky day. Everybody was passing all the crab to you.
Yeah, I was like,
there you go.
Dude, I wanted to go take the rest home and make some crab cakes with it or something.
Yeah, but, or anything.
You know, or something, but it was just, nah, that's what you eat it on the spot. We were out in...
Yeah, that's the thing with shellfish or any sort of fish. It's one of those same day things
for
me.
Let's eat it. Yeah,
I don't want to do leftovers.
Let's get it down. You know, if I'm having problems with sriracha from 3 years ago, you know, a bad fish, oh, God, that would be food poisoning, you know. What I had was just a little upset stomach that I can handle, you know.
Yeah, food poisoning is nothing nice.
I've had that one, and it is no fun. No fun.
And for with crab and lobster, to me, it's that butter sauce. I don't know if it's just melted butter, but I don't do really so much of the, what is it with the fish and chips, the tartar sauce. So I've never, I don't know if that's even a thing, if you do tartar sauce with any of the other kinds of fish or shellfish or hollandaise sauce.
But what is it? Because don't they add something sometimes?
I don't know.
Butter?
That's what I mean. It's probably garlic.
Yeah. Maybe that's it.
You know,
okay.
But that melted butter sauce, and you're just dipping it in there, and it's on your fingers.
Yeah,
and it's fun to eat, man.
That's it.
Napkin in your shirt, just like, I'm going to do elbows on the table. I don't even care what this looks like.
Dude, but you're right. It's the garlic that makes that butter. It's garlic butter. Because I was like, wait, I know what you're talking about.
But there's it's not just butter in the microwave. But they put
garlic.
You know what I mean? They put a little razzle dazzle on it.
Yeah. And then it's simple as a great, like we talked about, a great steak. Or a great piece of pork, if it's a great piece and it's a fresh piece, or aged properly,
yeah,
just salt and pepper, you know, that's all you need.
Don't need a lot of dressing up.
So what you're saying is your number one way would be to go with the butter and the garlic,
yeah,
because it's not only is it simple, but it enhances the flavor of the of that crab.
Yep.
Just soaks into the little things and just you're biting into just that extra. It just pairs so well. So yeah, you know what, now that you think about it, you know, 99% of the time out there, you know, I always go with the tartar sauce because it's all that's available where we're at. But
for crab,
but next time I cook, I'm gonna do what you said with the little and maybe it's parsley. I think it is parsley.
In the butter?
Or at the end, they throw a little parsley on there.
You could probably add whatever you'd like.
Yeah.
But yeah, I whatever they do at the places I've had it, there's
just
nothing floating in the sauce. So I don't know if it's real fine garlic and butter, but they do something. They dress it up.
Yeah. So I would go that way if you can. But, you know, a lot of these places have really good tartar sauce. So especially if it's fresh, you know, and they make it themselves. God, it's a... Yeah, it's heaven. But once again, like tartar sauce, you got to have it fresh. Can't let it sit out too long. You know, the mayonnaise in the sandwich, like you'd mentioned before, if you're heating it real quick. So, but it's when you leave it out.
Yeah, it's different than if it's been sitting out all day at a barbecue and then it makes you sick. No, this is real quick. And it's you just do a little bit of the mayonnaise. It's not like you coat it. You know, it's just like a little clear coat.
Okay. And can you think of any other sides besides that?
For me, there's tons of them, But for me, like I said, it's real simple. I go with those three depending on the sandwich I'm choosing. But no, not, you know, I don't know. Because it depends on the event. If it's just a meal for me, I'm only doing three things. I'm going to do a sandwich, soup, and then maybe, you know, a fry or a chips or a macaroni or potato salad.
Okay, yeah.
So it's a rotation of those.
Those are the main ingredients.
Those are the main ingredients for a meal for me.
Yeah, it's the only one I can think of other side is either a side salad. And one of the things with that, the coleslaw, you were mentioning when I'm at home,
yeah.
What I like to do is I like to take the cabbage and just a little purple and mainly the green and chop it up and throw in a little bit of you know, teriyaki sauce, and
okay.
a little bit of you know, soy sauce, and then a little bit of I used to use brown sugar, but now I use a little coconut sugar.
Oh.
And I throw it in there, and then I'll add maybe a little sweet sauce, like we were talking about the guys that have the ketchup, the Australian company I was telling you about. And they have a sweet ginger, so maybe I'll throw a little bit of dab of that in there, and it just has a nice Asian flair, like a Chinese chicken salad. And then I'll crush up some peanuts and throw that in there. And it's a really quick and easy way to have a quick side. We're talking home, because I know we were talking, you know, when we'd love to go out to restaurants and stuff. But it's just quick and easy. And every time I've made that for my friends, they're like, wow, that's really good. How'd you do that? And it's really simple. It's a really simple, easy recipe. And you just kind of judge how much sweetness you want, how much of the soy sauce or teriyaki flavor you want. But you want a little sweetness. You want a little soy. You know, like a sweet and sour, and then you want your both cabbages a little that purple, and then just crushed peanuts on top, and you're golden. So anyway, I just want to mention that because that was one that I've been doing lately, and it's fun and easy, you know. So I think that wraps it up for
Because coleslaw, coleslaw and all those things, and like you're mentioning, dicing and slicing the sandwiches, especially when you got a bunch of people there, is fun and good to do. Because we were talking a little bit about sports last week, and these are good things for tailgating. Like if you wanted to do a bunch of sandwiches and then cut them into fours, a big batch of coleslaw, you know, then you could have some wings, or not wings, I like legs, a bunch of legs. If you want to do chicken, do legs on the grill, and some burgers and hot dogs or hot links. And those are great for tailgating or any sort of sporting events.
God, this is make me like go, oh my God, I haven't been to a tailgate party in years.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
And we're getting back into it. And, you know, segue into sports. Yes. I think there is no better entertainment out there than a live ball game. And I'm talking about any level.
Any level.
I'm talking, I love watching little
Pop
kids
Warner
play.
On up.
You know, yep. We're at T-ball, you know. I was at a 4th of July party. And I swear to God, the kid had to be reincarnated from something. And he was 4 years old. I think his birthday's today. Actually, his birthday, I think, is today, because he said he was going to turn 5 on Sunday. And this kid would start talking to me. I love baseball. And so I said, well, you do? And I knew my friend had a baseball bat there, so I grabbed the baseball bat, and I went outside, and I said, here, we're going to play baseball. So we're looking around for a ball or something. We couldn't find anything, but there was a couple of balloons.
Yeah.
So we made the strike zone, and then I showed him where the bases were, and we played Invisible Man, you know, where he's the batter, but if
Ghost Runner.
Yeah, and you put the guy on first and stuff.
Yeah, it's a Ghost Runner.
And so I said, oh, this would be fun. I'll teach him the basics of baseball, you know, like first base, second, all this stuff.
Yeah, hit,
and
run,
then,
catch.
Then we did, after we were playing for a while, it was so funny because the kid corrected me a couple of times. He goes, oh no, that's not how it goes. It goes like this. I go, oh my God, you're absolutely right. You know, I forgot about the infield fly rule or whatever it was.
Yeah, and baseball's got crazy rules.
You know, but I was like, oh my God, this kid is 4 years old and his baseball IQ was higher than mine when I was in high school. You know what I mean? I mean, the kid.
Yeah, we got a lot of information out there.
That's true. These kids are learning fast. But he picked up on it so quick. I go, if it doesn't cross the plate, don't swing at it.
Yeah.
And this kid had the best eye I've ever seen.
Dialed in, they call that.
Oh my God, but he was 5 years old now. Yeah. And
was he hitting with his elbow up?
And I taught him. I said, you gotta rock back and cock back.
Yeah.
Because you want to cock the bat back and rock back. That's a George Brett.
Well, it's a rotation of the weight. It's you take your weight from your back foot as you step into it to your front foot, and then it's all in the
core. Yeah, but you got to bring your bat back to get that balance, and then you're supposed to hit it.
Swing is so important.
Oh, dude, then you get that snap right in the middle.
The wrist.
Where the two collide.
It's all in the
wrist. You know, and the kid had a great eye. I mean, I go, hey, and then I start getting mad. I go, hey, why didn't you swing at that? He goes, it was a ball. And I go, fuck, I can't argue with the kid. You know, but it was hard to throw the straight ball with the balloon. So I was getting a lot of movement on my ball. But he stayed with it, you know. And then he hit it, and I go, okay, run. And then there was one time when, you know, and we're talking first base is, you know, 6 feet, 8 feet.
Yeah, it's not regulation.
It's not regulation. But there was one time I had the ball, and I was on third. And I go, are you going to try to go to second? And he looked at me and he goes, no, you got the ball. And I go, okay, good. Because most of the time, a little kid, we had suckered into that one and run to second. You go, gotcha. But you got to, you know, he was, his IQ.
No, it's different nowadays. There's too much information and they got stuff out there. No one's falling for the okey-doke. They're not going to run when you got the ball.
Okay.
They know there's YouTube videos and all that stuff.
All right.
It's a whole different millennium.
Well, thank God we're too legit to quit.
Exactly.
Just like MC Hammer.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, funny story, segueing into baseball, you know, you're talking about moments and stuff.
Is
my dad, you know, as I told you, worked for the Oakland Coliseum.
Yeah, what a great job.
And so, as a kid, we would go over to the A's, too. You know, like, we'd always get to go down to Greens and all that kind of stuff. And I always remember when we go to the A's game, there was a group of black kids that would always be with us, you know, because we got there early. And, you know, my dad would go, oh, you got to go kill some time. So you go out there. And so they'd be getting the practice balls before they were letting people into the stadium.
Yeah.
And... they were super nice kids, and we were always like, you know, hey, what's up? You know, what's going on? And we never fought for a ball or anything. I mean, if like we caught it, we caught it. They were really nice kids, you know. And I was, you know, I always wondered, you know, how come those guys got in? Like, who was their dad and all that kind of stuff? Like,
who were people?
Who were those kids? You know, years later, you know, when you're thinking back, and then I was reading something back then, you know, in my 30s or whatever. That Charlie Finley took in the local kids.
Oh, that's awesome.
And would let them, you
know, like a big brother thing.
Like, and let them come in, and his favorite guy was MC Hammer.
Yeah.
And that's where MC Hammer, you know, got a lot of his.
Well, yeah.
Charlie Finley loved him. And here,
because I seen the with the MC Hammer on one of the documentaries I watched. It's funny. I was just talking about this last night.
Oh, funny.
Is MC Hammer, because he was an amazing dancer, right? And he was in front of the Coliseum, and he would just be out there dancing. And I think that's where Charlie Finney. I don't know who the guy is or whatever, but someone with the AIDS organization would see him out there every game dancing, and he was so good that he befriended him, and then he would bring him in for the games, and they kind of like, he was kind of like a bat boy mascot deal.
Yeah.
And then he grew up to just to,
but
you know,
a natural one. It wasn't it was like he was one of those kids that Charlie Finney, and we're talking young, you know.
He was a talent for sure. MC Hammer, you know, the way he could dance.
Yeah, and then we're talking.
He is a Bay Area legend.
Yeah, and we're talking, you know, he was probably, you know, 10, 11, you know, years old.
Yeah.
And that's about how old I was right then.
But what's crazy
and
is
we're the same age.
Yeah.
So that, you know, like I look back.
But
and I
back
go,
in the day like that, he was choreographing all that stuff himself. It wasn't like there was a YouTube or there was an internet or there was a computer where you could look up dancing.
Why do you think they call it Straight Out of Oakland?
Yeah.
Way before NWA.
Yeah.
You know?
So he was coming up with all that stuff. I don't know how he was doing it, but he was doing all those moves himself.
Oh man, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming. I don't know. I don't know how he. But it's not like you could, like, cause nowadays you could just go online and you could look up dance moves and there's tutorials to learn them.
Yeah, and you know what? You're talking about a natural.
Exactly. That's the word I was looking for.
There was a show back back in the 80s that used to host. It was way before, you know, we all had video phones and all. But used to host videos of people and talent and all that kind of stuff. It didn't last very long, and I can't remember the name of the show.
Was it with Ed McMahon? Like Star Search?
No, it wasn't Star Search. It was like that, but a little bit more, not G-rated, a little more PG, you know, going up the ladder a little bit. But it not as more for adults, too. And I'll never forget, this kid came out, was about 9 years old, right? And he comes out, and he was a little younger than us, so it wasn't MC Hammer, but about, you know, around that vintage. And he comes out, and he starts dancing with his brother, who's the little guy, who's like five, right? And he starts dancing, and they're doing the same moves, and these kids are looking fantastic. And then you think, oh, they're, you know, the older one's going to be the talented, you know. And then the older
Jackson
one...
Jackson fived him, didn't he?
Oh, dude, yeah, exactly. Exactly. He turned around. He was Marlon. Yeah, but they were both awesome. But
when
he was
Tito?
No, Marlon. Marlon was Michael Jackson's one older notch older brother, and was always in the thing, but couldn't dance. He wasn't a natural like him. Had to work at it, and he did it. You know, he did exactly what he was. But you could watch the two together, and one was like effortlessly perfect.
There's levels to things.
Yeah, even though they're in sync, you could feel the difference. And so when you said Michael Jackson, this kid started doing stuff, and he was 5 years old, and he was so flexible, and he was moving, and he was doing the bump and grind. It was around R. Kelly time, and he was doing the bump and grind, and the crowd went crazy. They went absolutely crazy. And you know who taught that kid? At 5 years old, he had to be a natural.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you got to practice. You know, I know Allen Iverson says not to, but kids, don't listen. It's a scam. You want to get good at anything, you got to practice.
Yeah, don't get it twisted. Allen Iverson practiced. He just wasn't about that practicing with the team.
Well, he had a personal issue he was dealing with.
Yeah,
at the time,
for sure, for that speech. But the whole thing is he put in the work.
Oh,
he definitely put in the work. I just don't. I feel like he just wasn't with that running suicide lines and doing layup drills. Allen Iverson was a gamer. He did it for real.
Yeah, and you know what? I love Allen Iverson, man. I love watching his highlights and just the way he, oh my God.
Oh my gosh, a number one pick as a guard. There hadn't been a guard pick number one in years.
Yeah.
You know, a 6 foot, 175 player just taken to the hole like that. This is back in the day without spacing.
Yeah, and I have a feeling he's my height. I think he's 5'10".
Well, yeah, this is in shoes. They measure him.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, just an incredible athlete.
Yeah. Yeah, and fun to watch.
Yes.
You know, I mean, he crossed over Jordan in the beginning of his career.
I saw that game, but it's one of those things. He had way better crossovers.
Yeah,
I mean, Jordan was still there to contest the shot, but I'm a little bit biased.
The play
that stands out to me, the one that gets him and then all that, is when he stepped over Ty Lue.
You know,
in the finals,
I've seen that a million times, and you know what? I played a lot of basketball in my life, and he kind of did a little step hop. I mean, but what are you going to do at that point? Because I've been in the air and I've come down on people, and one time I came down on a guy who was a tight end for Florida State or University of Florida, great guy, and Jeff Newman out there in Campbell. And he was a football player, so I go up and I knock into him. He's 6'5", 6', whatever, big guy. And I go for the layup, and I knock him down. And I'm flying through the air. And as I came down, I automatically saw him, so I spread my legs to land like a staple, so I don't land on him.
Yeah, sportsmanship.
Yeah, you know, and as respect. And but he was a football player, so as soon as he saw me coming down, he tried to roll away from me, and I stepped on his head and gave him a concussion. I stepped on his head, his noggin, and I was fine. And you know, he had to go to the hospital. So I thought what he did, being a basketball player, is when he stepped over and was like, "Okay, I gotta go, but I gotta step over him." I didn't, you know, a lot of people thought that was disrespectful. I don't think he was being disrespectful at all. I think he was trying to be cautious.
Yeah, you should watch it again. The whole thing is he could have went around him. He could have waited for him to get up. The whole thing to me is the way he stepped. He stepped and he kind of landed on his heels. He put a little bit of on it. It wasn't excuse me, miss.
Yeah.
Step over.
I see what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's you got to go behind the curtain and read between the lines.
I got you.
You know what I mean?
Got
he could have waited. He could have helped him up. There's a million different things, but it is what it is. It's an iconic. It's a iconic moment, and it's you know, Ty Lue has had a great career, and he's, you know, Allen Iverson's a Hall of Famer superstar.
Right.
You know, Ty Lue's going to be a Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah.
And it's, so it's one of those things that it's a play. It's an amazing play, and it's Ty Lue did his job, and if you even go back and in interviews I've read, that Ty Lue wouldn't even have been on the team if Allen Iverson wasn't in the league, because the reason he was there was to be able to guard small guards. This is back when the NBA, where the average height was 6'6".
Yeah.
There was no small guys. This is before the positionless basketball. Yeah. I mean, there was Muggsy Bogues and a couple other smaller guys, but it wasn't like that.
Right.
You know, this was a big man's league.
Right.
Small players didn't get picked number one.
No. And let's not forget, you know, Spud Webb.
Yeah, and Muggsy Bogues. I mean, both under six-footers. I mean, they're just amazing athletes that put it down.
Yeah, but I mean, the Spud Webb's vertical was insane. And I remember watching a game of the week early in his career, and like you were saying, back then the average height was 6'6". I remember him taking off from the angle of the camera, taking off from the free throw line. In the game of the week on a Saturday, taking off, disappearing, because he had, you know, tall guys around him. And then all of a sudden he dunked it. He came out of the forest and dunked it.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Sick. It was sick.
Just amazing athletes.
You know, and it reminds me, and I might have talked to you about this one before, but it reminds me of that one I did at Cherry Park in San Jose one time when I had my buddy, I knew he had to finger roll, and didn't do the finger roll straight. He's a real flashy guy, Jimmy. And he went for the finger roll, and I ran right in between these two guys that were 6'5", 6'6", these two tall, big black dudes. And I ran right in between them because I knew I had a chance. And I timed it perfect. It was God's luck, you know, and the ball went off the brim, bang, 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 and then right to my side, perfect. And I just slammed it off the backboard. And I turned around, and these two guys are looking at me like, what the fuck? You know,
weren't expecting that.
Well, I went right in between two trees.
Yeah.
These huge guys that were just waiting for the rebound. Oh, we'll get this. We're on this side. He's shooting from the other side. We'll just wait for him to miss. You know, they weren't ready to jump. And
yeah, those are the best plays because the big guys, what it is the big guys are jumping flat-footed, and you're coming in waiting. They're not expecting you to come in.
Oh,
coming in with your momentum.
I flew right in between both of them, and I just jumped as high, as hard as I could, and then the ball just happened to come those fortuitive bounces, as they're called, and it just came right to my side, right above the rim.
Yeah.
So I just smashed it off the backboard and dropped it in. You know what I mean? It was badass.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was every god thought basketball gods had to be on top of that one, and that. But it just kind of reminded me of like disappearing.
Yeah.
A Spud Webb disappeared. And then came out.
He came out the trees. Yeah, his momentum took him through.
Yeah. And dunked it.
Yeah, of course.
On five guys that were 6'6", or taller, you know. So David and Goliath, you know, there's a reason. You know, don't.
But yeah, that's a memorable play. And memorable plays are amazing. And growing up in the Bay Area and with the Bay Area sports teams, I was so blessed. Yeah, so my first memory was, of course, of the Niners. And I remember the Dwight Clark catch. I remember my first big game I remember was the Niners against the Bengals with Icky Woods.
Yes.
And Icky Woods had all this hype, and he was so good, and it was so this, whatever, and they just came out and crushed him. I just couldn't believe that's how it went down. I was so happy. It was such a memorable game. I don't even know how old I was, but I mean, I was, you know, I wasn't a teen yet, so I mean, it's a pretty permanent memory.
And I'll tell you why that happened, Rodney Lott.
Oh, yeah. No, their defense was amazing. Yeah.
I mean, and the whole defense. But, man, Ronnie Lott, he was my first defensive player that I ever watched in any sport where I go, I want to play defense. You know, I mean, that guy had the passion. He was straight, no nonsense. I'm going to get the job done.
Yeah, he would knock himself out to knock you out on a hit.
Yeah.
He would lead head first. He didn't care about concussions. I remember he was one of those players. He was a cut me Lou guy like Rocky. I remember he broke his finger and they just, you know, all right, just instead of it would need surgery and he could not play the second half, but he just taped it up. And I think he got part of his pinky amputated because he played instead of just stop not playing.
Yeah.
Like that's sacrifice and dedication.
Yeah, he belongs to the Busted Pinky Club.
Yeah, all athletes and all boxers got one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you, you're talking baseball stories? We're talking baseball stories, right?
No, we're just talking sports in general, but yeah. Before we jump into that, on defense, it was, for me, it was Ronnie Lott, It was Deion Sanders and Ray Lewis. I mean, and then you could go back into with LT and those other guys. They were a little bit before me. But yeah, it was those guys made you want to play defense. They were so flashy. They were so awesome. They were so athletic. They just did it for real.
Well, Ronnie Lott did it for me as far as, you know, wanting to really focus on defense. And, yeah. and even though when I was
He would
young,
change the game.
Yeah, and Deion took it to a whole nother level. Yeah. I love Deion Sanders.
Primetime, you know. Baby.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, when he played, nobody went from first to third better than he did, and Deion Sanders.
That's game speed. Yeah, he was a blur. He was
and
so good.
It was
good.
So beautiful to watch.
But yeah, as far as two-sport athletes, I mean, and we're talking about defense, but we can't leave out Bo Jackson. No. That might be the best athlete I've ever seen. I mean, he was just nuts.
Well, you say natural. Yeah.
Natural, I mean, God-given, like, this is what you're here to do. And they even gave him love in Tecmo Bowl. Like, if you were the Raiders in Tecmo Bowl, a video game for Nintendo, I mean, you just hit B, 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 and he would break tackles. You could run a 100-yard touchdown, no problem. It was almost like cheating.
Yeah.
And that's how he was on the field. He was a cheat code.
And the way he played baseball and just was he's such a natural in the way he ran and just did everything. Yeah, I was at a spring training game and I knew he liked to take that outside pitch over the fence, and I was sitting with my buddy Patrick Michael O'Daly IV, and we were sitting in the bleachers right down in Arizona, and we got some kids around us, and the kids are like, "Well, what do you think Bo Jackson's going to do?" And I say, "Oh, he's going to hit a home run right at us," because we were in right center field in the bleachers, right? And the kid, "What are you talking about? What are you talking about?" Well, I just knew he liked
that. That's what he swung for.
That he liked that pitch. He liked to take that pitch the other way because I'd been watching him. And I also knew that he was the kind of guy that could do it on a daily basis if he wanted to. And sure enough, about the seventh inning, sixth inning, puts one right by me and the kids. We didn't catch it. We were sitting down on blankets, in Arizona watching him play. And the kid comes back to me and goes, "How did you know that? How did you know that?" And I said, "I got ESPN."
There you go.
Anyway, it wasn't ESPN or ESP. It was just,
it's just
scouting. Just knowing what the guy, what the guy liked.
I liked it when Bo Jackson, he would crack the bat and he would break it on his knee.
I talked about that the other day to my friend.
Or he'd break it on his head. I mean, he was just such an amazing athlete. And as far as two sport athletes go, it's interesting to me that it's always baseball, football. I don't know if it's because the seasons work out like that, but there's not, because like Jimmy Graham's a football player, tight end. He played basketball in college and was really good. There's that guy that played for Cal. Oh crap! And then the guy that played for North Carolina. I forget their names, but they were both basketball and football players. But it's not Jordan, to me, was the only one that did basketball and baseball.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Danny Ainge did basketball and baseball. He got drafted by the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, he did.
And I think he actually played a couple seasons.
Yeah, he did. Baseball.
I mean, he
first.
Was legit. He was a legit baseball player.
Yeah.
But isn't that interesting? It's always, I don't know if it's the hand-eye coordination. I mean, because basketball, that's hand-eye coordination. Well, I don't know if it's body type or what, but there's a lot of two-sport athletes that are, and it seems like, well, Bo Jackson was offense. Jimmy Graham's offense, Deion was defense. There was also a guy, Robert Jordan, that played for the Falcons around the same time as Deion, and I think he played for the St. Louis Cardinals. He was defense as well, I believe, and he was baseball and football.
I never thought of it that way.
Almost want to say it was Julius Peppers, which is interesting because he was North Carolina. I think that was the North Carolina guy, but he was a defensive end, I think. So you're talking 6'6", 6'7", 6'5", you're talking 2-something. I don't know what he weighed in college, but as a defensive end in the NFL, I'm thinking like he probably pushed 270, 280 maybe. I don't know. Because what are those linemen? They're up there.
Yeah,
I mean,
I
know
the
linemen
are New York Giants?
I'm not sure who he played for in the league.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong on him being the North Carolina guy, but I know that it's interesting that it's just the two sports are baseball and football.
Yeah, but he was more a football player, right?
Yeah, no, he went to the league. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's what I remember.
But he didn't play baseball. He played basketball.
But football.
Yeah, but he went to the league and football.
Right. Yeah, in fact, he's actually one of the Chili God's favorite football players.
Oh, yeah, Peppers. There you go.
Yeah, like Dante Culpepper. He's one of
those.
Oh,
well, I don't know, man.
Okay.
Dante.
Yeah.
Dante.
All right. But, okay, we're now what we need to really talk about is... the most exciting thing you've seen in any sport live, or you know, biggest.
For me, I don't go to as many sporting events live as I would like. I like to watch them on TV, but for me,
TV counts too.
Yeah. But for me, like I was mentioning,
as long as it was live,
it was all the Niners. I remember all the Niners. I remember the catch. I remember John Taylor's comeback touchdown. I remember Jerry Rice's with all his touchdowns. I remember all that. But live that I've seen would be when Barry Bonds was doing his thing. I went down there. I would see McCovey Cove, and I didn't even go to my seat. I don't even remember where my seat was, but yeah. I sat up at the top in the McCovey Cove, and I watched all that thing. And Barry Bonds hit one in the water, splash mode. Oh. And I watched the guys in the canoe paddle, and their little nets pick up the ball. And I don't remember what number it was, but I went and checked that out for sure. That was history, and I knew that. I knew that for sure.
Wait, because it was one of his.
It wasn't a record-breaking one, but he was on pace.
Oh, was he? Or he was on.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, I don't, like I saying, I don't. It wasn't one of the. You know, I mean, it wasn't number 72 or anything like that. I'm not going to put that on it.
Yeah.
But it was that season. It was that time, and we knew.
Yeah.
We knew he was so dialed in. I mean, he would get bases loaded walks.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? He was just that dialed in. He would watch three balls, you know, and not swing at one of them, and then the guy would just put one little bit, like you said, like Bo liked it, a little bit high outside, and he would put it in the freaking water.
Yeah.
Well, you know? his
record-breaking home run was actually left center, but a little to the left. I mean, his record-breaking.
He would put them everywhere. He was so dialed in. I mean, it was amazing. And I it was like one of those things, like we got blessed with when the Warriors got KD. I was a baseball fan, and I watched him in Pittsburgh. I knew a little bit about his father. He was before my time. But I was a huge fan of him as a pitcher, Pirates. And then I think I was in high school when he was in that time. So I would buy stuff like just of the colors. And they had cool gear. You know, the black and yellow, the key on the hat. I had a Pirates hat.
Chili God colors.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, you got your orange, which is a yellow and the red mixed in together with the black, which is the dark side of the chili. And you got the bright side, and it's just like,
yeah. So it's a great color.
We're here for business. It's business.
Yeah, it's business time. Yeah, but it's a good color combination. But I remember watching him with that, and then when he came to the Giants, I was like, okay, it was like a change in the guards, you know. And then they went on those runs. They got Bochy. Yeah, it was a fun time. But that's a memorable one for baseball to me, because baseball's fun to watch live. I can't watch it on TV. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, speaking of McCovey Cove. Super T actually was right in the vicinity when Bonds hit that, when he broke the record, 715. He was actually right there in that little section. He goes, yeah, I was right there. But you're talking about a festive. One time we went to the game, at Giants game, and we were in McCovey Cove, you know, the bleachers, like we were. Just, we never sat at our seat. And
yeah,
we were,
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we were met this guy that managed a real nice restaurant down in Palo Alto. And he was telling us about his menu. We were doing food talk and all this kind of stuff. And great guy. And invited us down for a free meal. So we drove down to Palo Alto and had a free meal at this wonderful steakhouse. I wish I could remember the name. But it was really good. And we were sitting there, and all of a sudden, and we got there fashionably late, of course. Missed the traffic and all that. That's how we used to roll. But we get there, all of a sudden it's the seventh inning stretch, and we all looked at each other and we go, wow, we didn't even watch one pitch. That's what, how much fun and entertaining just being in that little area. No, not just us, for everybody. It's like the social little mecca that, we never went to our seats. You know what I mean? So it was just fun to be there. So when you're telling that story about being there and then getting to watch Bonds hit the home run over the fence, it's like, wow.
He'd hit at least one a game. It was just an amazing time. And the crowd would erupt, the crack of the bat. I mean, that's the thing about baseball. It's the smell of the peanuts, the crack of the bat, you know, the swing batter, all that. It's just amazing to be at. But I could break it down for my most memorable when I was in high school or around that time of sporting events. For me, the ones that stick out, going to college, it was UNLV running Rebels, Larry Johnson, Stacey Augmon, Greg Ackles,
Jerry Tarkanian
was a coach, biting his towel. But yeah, that team was amazing.
Because
I remember I felt a certain way when they went and faced Duke with Leitner, Grant Hill, Bobby Hurley, those guys.
Yeah.
And they lost because they went on a run, and then in the Final Four, in the championship game, I remember they lost that one year, and I remember it made me feel some certain way, and that was the first time in sporting events that I was like, holy crap, this stuff matters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was a young kid. And then they came back the next year and they won. I mean, the
I remember
it was an amazing play. I mean, Leitner throws that Hail Mary, or no, Grant Hill throws that Hail Mary to Leitner. I mean, Leitner might be go down as one of the greatest college players ever. Yeah. He fizzled out in the league, as people say, but I mean, he was a serviceable player.
Yeah.
But so for me, for basketball, it was a UNLV. For football, it was probably the USC, Reggie Bush, and those guys. I remember those teams. I mean, there was a couple ones. I mean, really, for football, it was probably that was later on actually. But for football, it was probably Notre Dame with the Rocket, yeah. with Raheem Ishmael.
Oh yeah, yeah.
With the Rocket, I remember that team.
But he did go with the Raiders.
He played for a bunch of teams. I don't remember who drafted him.
I think it was the Raiders.
It probably was. You know who was that? Al Davis loved fast wide receivers.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, we know he loved them. Yeah. So yeah, it was probably them. For another college basketball was always the North Carolina teams. I remember Jerry Stackhouse doing like memorable plays. You're saying I remember Jerry Stackhouse doing a baseline dunk where he came up. It was like Jordan's reverse. He came up on one side of the rim, but moved it underneath the other side of the rim and then dunked it right-handed. I mean, it was just an amazing athletic play. I remember that play. So those were amazing teams. As far as NBA, all that time it was the Bulls. I mean, the Warriors had We Believe. That was a little bit after the fact, and I was always a Warriors fan, and I loved watching them play. They just didn't have their stuff together yet, and they weren't getting the players that they needed. It was bad draft stuff. I mean, C-Webb, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
But it was the Bulls and Jordan. You know, it was the Jordan era. You know, when I was coming up, it was a little bit after Bird and Magic saved the league, and it was Jordan's turn.
Yeah.
So I caught the tail end of Magic and Bird, and then I remember I was in eighth grade when Magic came out with HIV, and that was devastating. It was crazy because it was brand new. Because I remember Eazy-E had it, and he was like dead a week later, and then Magic just pulled through. It's amazing. It's God bless science. But yeah, so I remember that was a huge deal. So that was the tail end. So Magic had to retire, and that was the tail end of Bird with his bad back. So it was Jordan just running the league. So my team was the Warriors, but I mean it was Jordan's turn, and everybody was watching the Bulls. So that was the football team, and then the Niners were doing their thing. I mean, we had Joe Montana, and we went from Joe Montana to Steve Young. We had Jerry Rice, John Taylor was there. Then we went from those two to Terrell Owens. I mean, Roger Craig to Ricky Waters. I mean, I was a fan of Ricky Waters. I mean, it was just player after player after player. We had Bill Walsh. We were doing the West Coast offense.
And we beat the Icky Shuffle.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, crushed them.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It wasn't even a game. But, so, I mean, I was just super
Kenny
blessed.
Anderson
Yeah, the quarterback. The Giants were later on when they did their, you know, when they did their every other year championship.
Yeah,
that was
nice.
Way after the fact.
That was nice.
The Giants were amazing. I mean, I was a huge fan of Matt Williams, Will Clark. We had great pitchers.
Will the Thrill.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? Oh, God.
I mean, Brett Butler out in the outfield.
Talking about when you were saying Barry Bonds, like every game, other game was hitting a home run back then.
He was hitting one a game,
know what it was about me and Will Clark, but every time I went to a Giants game
in
Candlestick, I remember going to a game, and I think it was like the 10th inning. It was extra innings. I don't know if it was more than 10, but it might have been the 10th or 11th, whatever. And the whole crowd's crowded. No one's going, like you said, no one's going home early. I'm with my buddies. And Will gets up and hits an upper decker. You're talking about moments in sports?
Yeah.
It wasn't even playoffs. Dude, it was just regular season.
From the crack of the bat to the whole stadium erupt, is there anything like that feeling?
Oh, my God, dude. I'll never forget that. The whole stadium. That's why I said.
It sounds like
the
thunder.
The whole stadium erupted. It was like, and the fact that he put in extra innings with two runners on. I don't think it was a grand slam. No, I think it was a three-run homer. But anyway, to come back and win, it was like, upper deck, dude. I'll never forget watching that ball just, and you knew right off the crack of the bat it was gone, and it was just like, oh boy, and watching upper deck Candlestick, that's a feat, you know.
Yeah,
put it upper deck. So I don't know, we're just talking off the top of our heads here, but you know, they're just coming to me, these plays that I remember being there.
Yeah, Candlestick was an amazing environment.
I love that place.
Yeah, I know. And what's crazy about Candlestick, and I would have to fact check this, but what I've heard is when they went to sell that place, they went in like the afternoon on a certain day, like they checked the weather when they went to do the lease and buy that place. And they went on a special day because you know how windy that place was and all that stuff.
Of course I do.
So they went on a day where the weather was perfect and they're like, okay, cool, we'll sign the lease, we'll build this here. You know, because you got Hunter's Point right there and all that stuff, and you got to stay on the front way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it gets a little sketchy over there. So it's almost like they swindled them. You know what
I mean?
Well,
and here's the funny thing.
It's a really interesting story. You should look into it if you're a fan of ballparks.
I am. And you know what? Here I thought, because my grandfather was best friends with the owner of the Giants and sat right behind the bench and, you know, had four tickets and all that stuff.
Well, it's different, I think. Never... It's not just on the owners because I think the city pays for it. So you get the, you know what I mean?
But what I'm saying is, I never heard that story, but it makes sense.
Yeah, because the city's got to sign off on it. So the owners don't care because they just want that thing. So they might have been in on whatever. Like, we got to get this done.
Yeah.
So we'll do it this day.
Yeah.
So I don't know the ins and outs, but they signed off on it. And then it was what it was. It was an amazing stadium.
But
so many great memories there.
But I'll tell you, there's a lot of great baseball players will tell you that played in Candlestick that they said that Willie Mays would have hit more home runs than Hank Aaron because of that wind. So many times he hit balls that would be out and, you know, they came back in. So, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Hank Aaron.
It is what it is. They only play a certain percentage of your games at home. So you got to, you know what I mean? It's just like in Colorado.
Half the games.
I understand but it's I don't like that. I hear what you're saying and the science is there, but it's like blaming the game on the refs. You know what I mean? You got to play what's in front of you. You got to play what's there.
Yeah, but I'm talking facts. That wind was bad.
I hear you. But it's just like if a guy plays in Colorado with that high altitude and that low wind. You know what I mean? And they build parks. It's just like McCovey Cove was built for Barry Bonds in his swing.
Right.
The left, you know what I mean?
And so what you're saying is factual. For Babe Ruth, .299 down the line?
Yeah.
The original?
No, it's 100% factual. Yeah. But I'm just saying what you're saying is science and factual and all that. But as a sports person, as a competitor, as an athlete, as a like whatever, you play who's in front of you and you
oh yeah no this you, is after
you,
the fact
that's my point that's
I'm
my
not
point
saying
no
right
exactly
now, I'm saying after
but just
the
to
fact.
No I know exactly what you mean but just to clarify it's an after the fact science thing but athletes know you know what I mean it's like seeing a pitcher on the second day or on a back to back.
I you're talking about another memorial memorable thing. I saw Tom Seaver get blown off the mound.
Yeah, it shit happens.
You know, and I think I wasn't ever with Juan Marichal, but I think it happened to Juan Marichal too. I wasn't at that game, but I played baseball with Tito Fuentes Jr. That was fun. But yeah, it was that was pretty memorable seeing that home run. God, across the bay, seeing the A's beat Gaylord Perry in the bottom of the ninth or tenth inning when he had won 16 games in a row for Cleveland and being there.
That's history.
Yeah, even though it didn't go in our favor or went in our favor, but it was a big game. It wasn't playoff, but it was just a big game. Was once again, the whole stadium erupted. And that was one of the games where the Warriors were playing that night.
Yeah.
So I watched the Warriors play, you know, Nate Thurman and all those guys. And then my dad ushered us across under the thing, and we got, and of course we had seats way up in the top because the house was packed, sold out. So I saw that from the bird's eye view. But I was at the Warrior game earlier.
Yeah, that sounds like an amazing day.
Yeah.
For baseball, for me, my first memory or my most memorable memory would be the, like you said, we brought up the A's, it's the Battle of the Bay. It was 89. It was Battle of the Bay.
Yes.
It was the Giants versus the Oakland A's. They were just going across the bridge. You know, they were right there, both things. And it was the giant earthquake.
Yeah.
So I will always remember that. I think I was in freaking eighth or ninth grade.
Where were you?
I was in, I don't remember where I was at. I was at home.
But with Santa Rosa?
I'm not sure where I lived at that point. But I just remember that watching the news, they canceled the game. People were super scared. I remember people trying to, the Bay Bridge, I remember it fell down because it's a double-decker. And I remember seeing people trying to jump that thing, and I was thinking, you dummies. But it was really interesting. It was really crazy because, you know, if you live in San Francisco or any of those other, you know, more South Bay down like that, you feel those earthquakes, but up in Northern California, it don't hit. We don't really feel those 7-point somethings or whatever it might have been. But yeah, the Battle of the Bay, and unfortunately, the Giants couldn't pull it out. But I can't remember.
They couldn't pull it out. They lost 4-0.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
It might have spooked them. They're athletes. It's whatever. They're performers. You know what I mean? It's just it wasn't their turn, and they didn't have it. The A's were a better team. They had better pitching. Because that's what I was going to say is I can name off a bunch of pitchers, a bunch of players, and I know all that stuff. But for some reason, I don't know if it's because I wasn't as interested in pitchers or whatever. I can't remember any of who the Giants pitchers were. You know, I remember Dennis Eckersley for the A's in that time. I remember Dave Stewart. Yeah, Dave Stewart. So I remember those pitchers for the A's, but I don't remember the Giants pitchers.
And Dave Stewart was an Oakland native. I think he went to, St. Elizabeth, I think. He was a local guy.
I know. Isn't that amazing when it works out like that to just, get drafted by your hometown team? I think that would just be amazing.
Yeah, and here, we were talking about other things being at the game. The two games I remember on... where people got hurt, but it actually was, one of them was World Be Freed. I was at that game for the Warriors, and a lot of people don't know this, but World Be Freed.
What are you talking about? That's a basketball player, I thought.
Yeah. The 70s, it was like 77.
Because what is in that, he's different than, never mind. I was thinking of
Tree Rollins. Well, he was an all-star.
Yeah.
He was a Warriors
all-star.
What
was his real name?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I remember, because he changed his name. He's like Ron Artest.
But it was he was ahead of his time, World Be Free. And he went up. I forget his. Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
There's a bunch of them.
I can't remember.
Hakeem put the H back on.
Yeah, I can't remember. But he went up I'll never forget it. He went up for the layup, and I was in the mezzanine level. I wasn't high. I wasn't behind the bench like sometimes I'd be. But I remember I was on the mezzanine level, and he was on the far court, and they came up for the layup, and the dude just pushed him from right at his hip underneath with both hands, and he went
dirty play.
It was a dirty play, but back then it was a rougher game.
No, of course.
And he did He did a gainer.
Oh wow!
So that means he landed.
Did he point his toes?
I don't know. But he got hurt seriously.
Yeah,
and they had to stop the game. Like, he was seriously hurt. They had to stop the game. I mean, they resumed play, but it took a while. It was like, this guy gets seriously hurt, and that's when the NBA had the breakaway rule.
Take him out.
But that was the event that led to them changing it. And the other one was a local kid. And I can't remember his name. It's on the tip of my tongue. But he was a local kid from Oakland. But he was playing with the Yankees, and it was early in his career. And I can't remember.
Was he a pitcher?
No, he was a left fielder. And it was at the Oakland Coliseum. We were watching, and everybody goes, yeah, this is a local guy. He's from Oakland, and he made it to the major leagues with the Yankees. But now he's playing in front of his hometown, so he wanted to do extra good.
Oh, of course.
And he went for a ball. God, what was his name? He went for a ball against the wall and ran right into the wall and had a career-ending injury.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
That's not a good story.
No. No.
Yeah, the only local guy that I could think of or know that played for the Yankees would be C.C. Sabathia, but he's from Vallejo. He's from the same neighborhood as E-40. But yeah,
oh, wow.
Yeah, Magazine Street, I think it's called.
Wow.
But that's the only local guy I know or I can think of. But yeah, but that's that. You're going back a little farther. No, I'm not as well-versed in baseball as a lot of things. There's so many players, man. It's like, how do you keep on track? There's so many guys. I couldn't even imagine being a scout for a baseball team. There's so many different divisions. There's so many. I mean, they get drafted out of high school. Sometimes they go to college. I mean, there's so many players. There's so many draft rounds. I mean, that's a hard job.
Yeah. But they know what they're doing.
I know. I get it. Because like you were talking about, there's levels of things, and you could tell. You could see when someone's got it, they got it.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell the guy.
Yeah.
You know. So I hear you, and it's just a matter of if they could put it together in the pros. It's a confidence thing because the skills are there. So I get it, but it feels like a hard job.
I wouldn't want to be a scout.
Oh, I would love to be one. I'm just saying it's hard.
Or an umpire. Let's give our props to those guys.
Yeah, I would not want to be a referee or an umpire.
You can't please everybody. You know what I mean? Half the people are going to be mad at you when you make the right call, even when you make the right call. So
yeah, but that's just how the game goes, and you just, as long as you're doing it fair. But who knows? That refereeing and umpiring is a whole different thing, because we don't know if it's fixed or what. And as sports fans, we're just going to leave that to the conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, but also with the umpires, they have to have really thick skin,
Oh, they don't give a shit.
oh, I couldn't. That, and that's why maybe I couldn't do it, because I'd be like, wait, maybe I'm wrong.
But it's not about you. That's why the NBA refs, that people get mad at them, because they feel like the NBA refs call dumb technicals and dumb stuff, because they feel like it's more about them and their feelings. When, and I think umpires and refs, there's more of them, and there's a strike zone, and this is my strike zone, I'm calling that, and they, and it's not about them as much. They got all the gear on. I don't know if it's because their faces aren't exposed, and the same thing, I don't know what it is, it just feels different, you know. But you're right, people get in their feelings about anything, and you know, there's guys that do certain, like, you know, they put a little fucking jazz on their strike calls. So I get what you're saying. Everybody's performing when you're out there in front of a crowd, so
I think it's that. Entertaining though.
Oh, for sure, you know? I'm not mad at anything.
Yeah, or go. Oh, you were saying about, does an announcer make or break a game? And I was thinking,
that 100%.
That guy that goes, goal, or whatever he says.
Oh, that's just soccer.
That's soccer. But my favorite guy of all time was Bill King.
Okay.
Bill King for the Warriors, and then he came over and did the A's. And just listening to him, you know, just describe, made the play. I mean, I could listen to him on the radio and feel like I was at the game. You know, because half the time I was at the games. You know, but if...
Yeah, baseball announcers are a different breed, because it feels like they have to... The game is so slow and so long that they have to have so many stories, and they talk at a slower pace. Basketball announcers, they talk a little bit about the game and a lot about, you know, anecdotes and stuff like that. And then football announcers, they're doing a lot of player analysis and then and talking about the plays. So it's a whole different... Each one of the announcers, depending on what you're announcing, they have a different style. I always thought it'd be hilarious if you brought in... Like, what if you had a fast-talking announcer for baseball games? You know, like, almost like if it... Like, what is it when
didn't
in auctions?
Didn't they have a...
Run better, 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 swing better, 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 you know, going once, going twice. You know, a fast announcer-type speaker that was doing it more auction style.
You make me think of Bob Uecker.
Was he fast? I've only seen him from Major League. I only know him as an actor.
But he was that quick wit, you know, and, oh, I must be in the front row.
Oh, yeah, just a bit outside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hear you.
No, that guy was great. He just great sense of humor, and he talked at a good pace. He was actually the Milwaukee Brewers announcer for years. I think he just retired a few years ago. So he was actually an announcer. I forgot about that. So I guess we're on the right track on that one. But, yeah, Bob Uecker, you know. But Bill King, like you said, was a fast talker. Not a slick talker, but a, you know, fast talker, and he just had that nice voice that you like to hear.
It's a skill. It's a skill.
And it was consistent, and he would do traveling, you know, and then he'd have the organ playing in the background, boom, 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 you know, and then with his voice, it was a pairing. It was just a beautiful pairing, and it was just wonderful to. God bless Bill King. I loved his voice.
Yeah, it's a show. At the end of the day, as sports fans, I just look at it as a competitive event. But it's a show. They're putting on a show.
Yeah.
It's got to be good, because you could tell between a playoff game and a regular season game or an all-star game, you could tell when they put a little bit more juice on it.
You know, it's funny you say the show, because you know, I always thought of it as a show because I was on the inside.
Yeah.
You know, my dad working for
the
Warriors. They
call it behind the curtain.
Yeah, behind the curtain. And it's so funny, because when the Cleveland Indian scout wanted to draft me, which was, you know, really a high honor for me, because I didn't even play in high school. But, you know, when he wanted to draft me, it was just like my friend goes, oh, he wants to give you a job. And I remember I looked at him, a job. I go, this is baseball. This is a show. This is fun. You know, like...
But yeah,
I was
but anytime you're getting paid, when you just got to sign a contract, you know what I mean? It's a job.
Here I am, 24 years old, you know, thinking, not even realizing it's a job, because I came from the other side where it's like, oh, it's a show.
It's an activity.
You know, my dad did tell me one thing, and he said, the best basketball players in the world, the top, make it to the NBA. And it's not necessarily true. There are guys out there that I played on the streets.
But that's a whole different conversation, because the whole thing is there's amazing athletes out there, and there's amazing guys that just never made it, because the NBA, the NFL, the baseball, MLB, I think it's called, it's a team sport. So it's different between being a one-on-one player or someone that could just do whatever. You got to play within a system.
Yeah.
You got to be coachable.
Yeah.
There's all these different rules. And all these different things that you go, regulations that you got to go abide by to play, you know, you got to be unselfish. You got to play a role. You're a part of a team now.
Well, yeah, when I took sports psychology at San Francisco State years ago, the lady described it as those old banks that have, you know, the quarter goes all the way down, then the nickel, and so on, the penny and the dime, that if you go down there in one of the slots, you don't make it. One is being luck, right place, the right
time. Who you're drafted by, your teammates, your coach. I mean, it's just like life. Sports is life.
Yeah.
It's, you know, all the outside factors.
And it's, they not do always matter. Fair. Whether it's the umpire making a bad call, or somebody not getting drafted to your team that you wanted them drafted to, and then your team sucks because they didn't draft the guy you wanted to draft, and now you're not a fan anymore.
And the coach might not like you, or you might be drafted high, so they got to play this guy ahead of you. He's got guaranteed
coach's
money.
Coach's son,
all that. Yeah, like you said, fair. Fair, I've heard. I mean, it's a saying as old as time. Fair is a place you get cotton candy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not something in life. It's not fair.
Yeah. So let's focus on positive, because I don't want to cry about my baseball career.
Yeah.
Because there's no crying in baseball.
There's not. Tom Hanks told us.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks told us.
Well, I thought it was Madonna. No, he was yelling at Madonna.
No, I think he was yelling at, I don't know who he was yelling at, but there's no crying.
Okay, so we're not going to cry about it. We're going to talk.
But yeah, but they're all good experiences. In sports, there is no bad feelings, because they all mold and shape you, whether you strike out or whether you hit the game-winning home run. They're all things you could take from them, and it's perseverance, and you get up and you do the next play like nothing happened. Baseball and football and basketball, it's a short-term memory game.
Yeah.
The last play doesn't matter. Every play starts off 0-0, and then that's how you break a lead. That's how you keep a lead. You chip away, and it's one play after another. And that's kind of how life works.
Yeah.
You know, it's one goal after another. You set goals. You meet those goals. You set new goals. If you can't meet your big goals, you set small goals. And you break your day into just like a quarter of basketball, football, or baseball. You know, you can't waste a day. If you wake up and you blew the first two quarters, pull it out in the third and the fourth. You know, at 4 and 5 o'clock, handle your goals.
No, dude, you know what's funny? Because, like, I've had days in my business where I got a late start, and now I'm behind the clock, and I forgot to do this, and then I'm like, there's no way I'm going to get all these deliveries
done. You got to put it through.
And then all of a sudden, the second half, things would click, and boom, 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 and not hit traffic, or this or that.
To the whistle.
And then, and run through the finish line.
Yep.
Run through that finish line. You know, don't stop. You know, that's the Pete Rose mentality. Well, you know, but... Pete hustled. Charlie Hustle.
And had a million names.
And no matter what you do in life, hustle.
Yep.
You know, because it ain't... Don't be the guy that's a fail when he's on the video winning the Super Bowl and dropped the ball before he got to the...
Don't showboat it till it's time to showboat it.
Yeah, that's at the cocktail party afterwards.
Yep.
Where you're
popping bottles. When you light that victory cigar.
Yeah, and popping bottles with models. You know, that's when you celebrate. You don't celebrate, I could have been a contender. No crying. Go be a contender.
Yep, because
it ain't over till the fat lady sings.
Exactly.
I don't even hear her. She's not even in the building.
No, because it's not a race. It's a marathon. It is a timed event, so you got to put it in gear, but it's a marathon.
Yeah, keep it on the mind.
Keep it on the mind. So no matter what you're doing, do it with a little bit of positivity. Do it with a little bit of open-mindedness and understanding, and just get your goals accomplished. So,
and keep your mind on your money and your money on your mind.
Yeah,
that goes without saying.
Yeah.
What's the number one rule? Get the money.
Well,
that's number two and three.
Well, I mean, I think that's one way to look at it, because we got to live, we got to eat, we got to do whatever. But if you could find some happiness, if you could find some just level playing field where you're doing your thing and you're enjoying what you're doing and you're feeling appreciated, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're about over here. So we're signing off from One Take with Frank, OTF for those that like to abbreviate, keeping a 10-toe down for the culture, and we will see you next time.
Peace out.